Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, this is Rick, and welcome to Affair Recovery Radio tonight. What a pleasure to have you on this Mother's Day. And I hope that you did have a good day. Steph and I just got back from a restaurant, so we certainly had a good time. And, of course, it's nice to be as many years post infidelity as Stephanie and I are, but what a blessing to have you with us tonight. And tonight we have a very, very special guest, Ann and Brian Birch, and they are, I think you're going to find them to be an incredible blessing. Ann works a great deal. In fact, she runs a national network for hurt spouses, and so I know Ann and Brian and have run into them at Smart Marriages, and can't say enough good things about them. I think you're going to be incredibly blessed just getting to talk with them. So, Ann, are you and Brian here?
I'm here, Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, guys.
It's great to hear your voice.
It's good to hear your voice. How have all the weddings been going?
One down, one to go.
Well, my heart goes out to you. I mean, it's a lot of fun, but I know that you guys have been incredibly busy.
Yeah.
Yes, very busy. It's all good stuff, though, and I just feel incredibly blessed when I think back to that place where we were 8 years ago, wondering if it was even sane to believe that there was any hope at all for our marriage. And here we are, you know, 2 weeks from today, or from yesterday. Brian will be walking another daughter down the aisle in our backyard, you know. So what a tremendous testimony of how marriages can and families can be brought back together. We're just awed.
Yeah, and I know when Stephanie and I married both of our daughters in the same year, we were just talking about what an amazing thing and how grateful we were that we had been able to work through everything also. So I don't remember where you guys live.
Near Vancouver, British Columbia.
Okay, so everybody listening in, they are far off. They're in Vancouver.
The most beautiful city in the world, Rick.
You know, it really is one of the prettiest places I've ever been in my life, Brian.
Yeah.
Steph and I, when we went up there visiting one time, said, you know, we could live here. So, and I'm sure that the wedding was just absolutely beautiful.
Yep.
So, there are several things that I really wanted to be able to cover tonight, guys. I wanted to be able to talk about what happened to the two of you 8 years ago. I wanted to pick your brains about Ban. I certainly wanted to be able to talk about that. Since I've got both of you on the line here, I know you've got so much to share, and I know you work with lots of couples, so I've written lots of little questions here. And if y'all have questions you want me to ask that I haven't been savvy enough to ask, be sure to say, okay, Ricky, need to ask us this question, okay?
Okay.
Make sure we get everything covered.
All right, sounds good.
Would the two of you mind just beginning by telling your story?
All right, I'll give a brief version, and then Brian can fill in his side. From my perspective, we had been married for 18 years at the time that Brian came home and confessed the affair to me. And prior to that, I had no idea whatsoever that anything was going wrong. And some betrayed spouses are aware that there's something's not quite right. I had no suspicions whatsoever. In fact, I like to point it out just because the great irony of it is at the time I was taking voice lessons and I was driving home from this voice lessons that I was taking the night that Brian confessed the affair, and I was singing in my car to the Toni Braxton song, Unbreak My Heart, you know, and I remember singing really loud in the car and thinking, wow, that's just such a great melody, but boy, those words are depressing. I feel sorry for people that have to go through that. Good thing we have such a great marriage and that would never happen to me. And I was driving home to hear right. that it had happened to me. And so when Brian told me about it, I went into a state of shock and really wasn't able to move from the chair all night. And chaos ensued in our once quite happy, what we thought was somewhat of a model family in the area. And the way that I would describe the journey, you know, the first 3 months was a period of numbness and shock, and there was a lot of fighting. Brian moved out for 2 weeks, and it was very, very confusing. And I would have thrown in the towel altogether had I not had some very good advice from some friends who said, Anne, you know, you can end this marriage if you want. You have absolutely every right to do so, and nobody would blame you. But we've seen you and Brian together. We know Brian loves you. We do not understand what is going on at the moment, but we just really encourage you, don't make any decisions while you're in the motion of the moment. Just stabilize yourself first, and then, you know, decide in 3 months. And that was really good advice. It kept me from leaving early on. And then 3 to 6 months after we began to deal with our issues head on, and so I call it the period of fighting, and even though, you know, now with all that we've learned and, you know, what we're able to help other couples is deal with those issues, and I guess you might say do the fighting, but to be able to do it in a way that actually builds intimacy and helps you to feel closer to each other instead of doing further damage. So it doesn't need to be as hard as it was for Brian and I, but we just weren't able to find good help that we really needed at the time.
How did you find, I'm sorry to interrupt you, and yeah. How did you find such good friends?
We found them, and those were people from our church, so okay. We had good quality people in our lives, and we're just really grateful for that because we know that it is unusual, and not everybody has friends like that, but I think that finding some support was an important key to getting through this and making sound choices.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No problem. Brian, want to add anything on how you were feeling?
Well, all what you said was true. I guess, you know, 3 months before my affair started, if you had asked me would I ever do that, I would. You know, would have, you know, absolutely said there's no possible way. I was a good Christian man, had certain moral boundaries, a certain level of commitment, you know, a high level of commitment to my relationship, believed in monogamy, and, you know, really at that time kind of held those people that were unfaithful probably a little bit a lowered, you know, they weren't rated as high in my life or in my opinion. So I you know, and I thought that my relationship with, you know, I loved Anne and I was, you know, very much in love with her. And we had, you know, a tremendous good relationship. We had a lot of sex. And so all the myths about why people have affairs, we weren't part of that. You know, we had a good relationship. You know, we had sex. You know, things were quite good in our relationship. So I was really quite unaware leading up to that how susceptible I was, how vulnerable I was, and that probably being a little. Then also, I was thinking, well, just because I, Christian man, thinking that somehow God will protect me, and all these beliefs I had seemed to. Caused me probably more harm than good, and so as you know, as things progressed along with the relationship I developed with this woman at work, just kind of it all starts so very subtly and very slowly, and there's no real overt action by, you know, by her or by myself, and you know, a lot of the how the whole thing started was just as a relationship that we developed as a friend, and you know, we enjoyed talking with each other and shared some common interests, and that kind of fostered the relationship to grow and really to develop out of control. And you know, and looking back, in our work with couples now, we spend so much time really understanding how people could cross the, you know, this line of what was at one point something that was totally unacceptable. And in my own life, I had to figure out how I could have done that. And
yeah.
Quite a number of months going through that and develop, you know, understanding myself and learning why I ended up doing what I did. So
you did some pretty good self-exploration then, trying to determine how in the world did you get to that place?
I think so. And in order for anybody to, you know, to heal themselves from something like this, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, to confess and to stop and to quit, and that's, you know, that's certainly important. I think the level of prevention, that needs to take place, what tends to not happen a lot of times is that there's no real discovery of why you did what you did. So, and I, for myself, I needed to know that, you know, that what would the thing that would prevent me from having another affair would only I'd only be able to prevent that if I knew how I ended up involved in the first one. So I needed to know, well, why did I cross this boundary? Why did I do this? You know, and so I spent a great deal of time looking at myself and, you know, uncovering some not so good things, and you know, still on, you know, determining I was a person of value and of worth, and though I created, you know, I committed this heinous crime against my wife, that still did not make me a less worthy person to receive her love and her forgiveness.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously tonight, since I'm talking to you guys, I'm certainly glad that you worked through all that stuff, Brian.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm probably more glad than you are, Rick.
Well, yeah, I can understand exactly.
Yeah.
Especially after, you know, the last few weeks. So happy for you guys.
It's definitely, you know, and that's probably one of our biggest messages that we want to give to other couples out there, is that there is hope, and that, you know, if both people make the choice, and, you know, I definitely believe that, you know, one of the most important things any couple wants to do is make sure that they don't find themselves in some future place wondering, well, what if? What if I tried a little harder? What if I'd taken that workshop? What if I'd read some of those books? What if I'd talked to my spouse about it? Because, you know, once you distance yourself from the emotions, a lot of couples find they really did actually love each other. And, you know, and certainly that whole picture of the family and for the kids and for your future. And, you know, standing from where Brian and I are today, and you know, we're really not extra special. What we can do, any couple can do.
Right.
And the beauty of it is that, you know, with people like yourselves and people like us, we can show others the way.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be so hard. And so, but that hope is the first thing. A couple needs to know that they can not only heal and put it completely behind them, but they can have an even stronger and happier relationship than they ever imagined possible on the other side of it.
Well spoken. So in that first 3 to 6 month period that you call the period of fighting, what was your biggest challenge?
I think maybe
staying out of jail.
Hearing each other, really listening. I'll speak from my perspective and say that, you know, Brian would tell me over and over, you don't listen to me, and I thought I was a champion listener. And so I had a lot of questions about the affair, and Brian was not at first, you know, but as we worked through it, he was willing to answer all of my questions, and that was very, very helpful for me in healing. But I also had to learn how to listen properly. And, you know, oftentimes when we would be talking, we would, And he would tell me an answer to the question, you know, I had to be ready to hear that, if you want to bring out the truth, I had to be ready to hear the answers that sometimes weren't the answer I wished it was.
So can you give an example of what improper listening would have sounded like?
Well, so say I ask the question, you know, well, did you ever tell the other woman that you loved her? So he tells the truth, you know, I actually did once tell her that I loved her, or I did say it several times. How could you, you awful man, you're such a slime bucket, that's a terrible thing. And so I basically totally would shoot him down. That would be a wrong way of listening, not that, you know, but when you react like that.
Right.
One of the things that, did happen, and which is, you know, which caused a lot of the, well, there was a few, things that happened that create unhealthy listening patterns. And one of the things would be if she would punish me for telling the truth,
right?
Because then I would just learn to go, well, man, if you know I tell her the truth and I get slammed for it, you know, I'm less likely to want to do that again the next time. That was one of the things. You know, sort of, or to, you know, tell me I'm lying, or, you know, or to react angrily towards what I would say, right?
Right.
I needed to feel that, you know, it's a bit odd that I was the one that perpetrated the crime, as, you know, to, so to speak, but yet I still needed to be respected as an individual. So when I would share something, I couldn't... I needed her to hear what I was saying, because in reality I wanted to come, you know, I wanted to be repentful of what I was doing, and I wanted to demonstrate my love for her and my commitment to working this out. But I didn't want to have to be continually punished for something that I really wanted to work on.
So guys,
and I would say that what I learned how to do is create, and this was very helpful in healing. But to be honestly curious about Brian.
Right.
To have a real desire to understand him. So the spirit behind my questions became, help me to understand. I just don't get it. How does a good man end up doing something like this?
You know,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying, but one of the blessings is, and is that you saw him as a good man. You could see beyond his behavior, and you still somehow perceived him as decent.
Well, that was because, you know, 18 years prior to that, Brian had, you know, I like to sometimes describe it as made all these deposits into my trust account, into my belief in him. I had seen his behavior, you know, how he had given to others, how he had given to myself, to our family, you know, all the investments he had made in our marriage. He had, in many ways, his integrity in business, I had seen all those things. So it didn't make any sense that how do you go from that to suddenly have an affair? But you're absolutely right, Rick, to, you know, I had to learn how to separate his action of the affair from his entire person throughout eternity.
Right. So you said that the first 3 to 6 months you call the period of fighting. What's the next phase that you guys identified?
Actually, it was really beautiful how it happened, but, you know, sometimes, and we recommend that couples, as they're going through it, that there's kind of two things that have to be happening at the same time. One, yes, you have to deal with the affair head on, but two, you have to take breaks and have good times together, and sometimes go on a date and agree ahead of time that you're not going to talk about the affair, and try to experience some positive experiences together. You know, which, and I'll just clarify, for the betrayed spouse, they're usually not having a good time. They're thinking about the affair 24/7.
Right.
But they can still make that decision to turn it off as far as actually saying something, and to the best of their ability, try to just enjoy themselves for an evening. And we were coming up at Christmas, and the intensity had been escalating, and we probably had been just fighting too much. We weren't taking those breaks, and again, I feel like we didn't have good guidance through that period. And Christmas was coming, and because Brian's disclosure was in May, so Christmas was about 6 months after, and I remember thinking, oh, this is terrible. I'm going to end up throwing him out, and Christmas is forever going to be known as the time when Mom threw Dad out. And so because of that, you know, I went to Brian and I talked to him, and we both agreed that we were going to turn the affair stuff off at Christmas and just try to get through it without, you know, any discussions about it. But what ended up happening is we had one of the best Christmases together ever, and we really just needed that moment to step back from all the affair fighting and to realize, wait a second, we actually enjoy each other when this is put on hold, and there's a lot worth saving. So after that experience, things were much more stable in our relationship. I was a lot better. You know, the intensity was gone. And even though we still had conversations after that about the affair, and I definitely wasn't healed, there was a lot more hope. Yeah, and it was, we were just moving, we were having, it was, yeah, a lot less intense.
I think one of the things that couples need to learn, and, you know, which we didn't actually have a manual to go through like what we help couples deal with now, but we kind of, you know, we stumbled into it, and it was that we actually took a bit of a break, and we still seen the good in each other. Because a lot of times what couples face is that they're dealing with so much hurt and bitterness, and there's so many things and nasty things that get said back and forth between couples that pretty soon their whole perspective of each other and their relationship is clouded by words of anger and words said in, you know, in haste, as opposed to the way the truth of the situation with, you know, their relationship. And so what we ended up doing was we took a break there, and we actually redeveloped, you know, some fun things. We started to see, you know, we started to see the world from not being a cloudy, rainy day to that there was streaks of breaks of, you know, sunshine in between.
Yeah.
Which motivated us to, you know, to see, well, you know, our relationship isn't that bad. You know, this, you know, it, 'cause at the time when you're battling it out, it just seems like, man, this is going to last forever. And those were just kind of enough. It was just kind of like the, if you're playing sports, it's just like taking a bit of a time out, and you get your wind back, you get your perspective back, and you go, okay, well, I can keep doing this again, as opposed to trying to slug it out in a 12-round championship boxing match. Mm-hmm. Even in those, you know, that scenario, they get a break in between every round just to regroup, right?
Right.
And so that's what we found to be quite helpful. And in that time when we took the break at sort of the Christmas time, we actually had to be civil toward each other. We had to be nice, and we had to treat each other with kindness, which also developed. You go, okay, well, that was quite nice, and that was quite enjoyable, and that was pleasant, and that those were memories that, you know, a few months earlier, you go, oh my goodness, I can't remember a happy day.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, you know, it's like when you went, you know, all of a sudden you go step back into it and things are bad, you go, okay, well, you know, just like last week, it was kind of okay, so I can maybe get through it. And for me, those of us that have been betrayed or been unfaithful, I think it's important that we have those sort of breaks so that we can go look back at and go, okay, well, you know what? I'm okay. I can keep going through this because, you know, I don't think I could have done 6 months straight of hard time in battling with the affair. I think I needed, you know, those times where Ann Gate, you know, gave me a little break to go, okay, I can keep being, you know, I can keep answering the questions, I can keep learning, you know, explaining what things, you know, how things happened and why I did this, and so that was a really important thing for us.
You bet. So what do y'all have a term you use for kind of the second phase you went into?
Well, I just call it the period of fighting, and you know, It was the period of facing the issues head on. That's why, even though we didn't do it in the best way, and had we had the tools we were able to teach others today, it wouldn't have needed to be that bad. But there was a healthy part in it, because what we did is we faced the issues head on instead of avoiding them. And
right.
we really did talk the issues out. And so that was good.
So, Anne, did you discover anything about yourself through all of that?
Absolutely, I did. And I think that, you know, it definitely was a turning point in our healing journey when I was able to take responsibility. I take no responsibility for Brian's affair, but taking responsibility for my part in what could have been better in the marriage. And that was a very, very hard thing to do. And I'm very cautious with betrayed spouses in that I don't think that it should happen too early on
right.
in the process.
I agree.
You know, I started to realize that even though I've always loved Brian tremendously and I've had a tremendous amount of respect for him as a man, that my actions throughout our marriage didn't always communicate that respect to him. And I finally listened to Brian well enough to understand how that he had many times felt belittled and put down and berated by me, even though that was never my intention. And through that, I was able to just really change and hear that. And it was hard also, because when I heard the pain that Brian had been going through, I was so grieved to think of
yeah.
that he was in that place. And really, in his own ways, he had tried to communicate that to me before the affair. But I just, you know, when Brian would try to bring those things to my attention, I was so self-righteous. It was kind of like, well, no, we have a great marriage, and I do listen to you. And so I was kind of, without realizing it, always telling him he was wrong, instead of just hearing his side, whether I agreed with it or not. So that was definitely a turning point.
Yeah, well, and did your kids find out during that time period?
Yeah, they definitely knew about it. They were 16, 14, and 12,
yeah.
and I personally think that if any family thinks their teenagers don't know, they're just kidding themselves. They know something's wrong, and the insecurities are great. So our kids are very, very smart, very intelligent. So,
but also it helped that because
yeah.
I confessed to them as well what I had done, so... which probably was the hardest thing in the world I've ever done.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was, you know, in my own mind, I could tell Anne, and I could, you know, I had some reason, just like we all do that are unfaithful, we have some reason to blame our spouse for what we've done, or some reasons. But to look into the eyes of some, you know, some kids who are completely innocent and tell them what I've done, that was the most painful thing that I, you know, so, and of course, there was not, you know, there were some hard things to, you know, to work through with them. I think that was probably one of the difficult things, is working through healing our relationship with Anne, but also allowing our kids the space and the time for them to accept me back and to forgive me and the daughter that I'm taking down the aisle in less than 2 weeks, she was the toughest one, and so she really had some hard feelings toward me. But you know, I'm so excited now that I did do the right thing as an unfaithful person. I took responsibility. I didn't walk away from the family. I didn't blame somebody else for my mistakes and what I've done. I took responsibility, and now I can walk with my head held high. I'm very proud of my, you know, all my kids. They've all, in their own ways, told me they've forgiven me, and they're proud of what we have accomplished as not only as their mom and dad, but you know, as a couple together. They're excited about what we do, and. You know, so the reward of you know, working through your relationship, you know, is great with your marriage, but you know, the side benefit is that your kids respect you and honor you, and one of the things I learned, Rick, that you know, one of the side things or one of the extra bonuses that, you know, you probably face, I mean, maybe you might not face this down where you live down south, but in our part of the world, kids today are, well, maybe not even kids today, but the government where we live, they really are not taking responsibility for everything else. It seems that so many people are always blaming somebody else for something they've done, and it's not their fault, and they're not responsible. And I've had the opportunity to be able to teach my kids something that, you know, you're responsible for every one of your actions, and if you take responsibility for your actions, you can actually work through all that. And so we can't blame somebody else for something that happened to us, but we can take responsibility for our own actions, and we can determine our destiny by that. So
right. Okay, guys, I'll admit I'm being incredibly selfish here, partially because there's topics I just wanted to make sure I got to cover with you.
Okay, that's fine.
But I was going to see, do y'all mind if I open up the telephone? Because I know once I open up the telephone, sure, I may not get to ask you more questions. That's why I've been selfish over here.
Oh, okay.
Is that okay with you, Ann?
That's okay, just as long as we have a little bit of time to talk about Ban.
Well, that's where I was
going to,
before we open the phone up, that I want to talk about Ban, and I want to talk about your book.
Okay.
And so I'm going to give the telephone number, and you can't get on the air until we get to talk about Ban, and Ann and Brian have a wonderful book. So once we're done with that, if you're there, you can ask questions. If not, I've got all kinds of questions for you guys. So Ann, would you tell us just a moment about Ban?
BAN is the Beyond Affairs Network. It's an international network of support groups. It's for the betrayed spouse only, and it's meant to go in, work in conjunction with whatever other work you're doing for healing. Anybody who is the hurt spouse out there knows that when you're in that position, you need all the help and support you can get, and sometimes being told that you have to wait a whole hour till your next class or a whole week till your next counseling session, that's just absolutely unbearable.
Right.
So BAN is a place where you get peer-to-peer support, and it is so freeing to sit in a room full of people who actually everybody gets it and understands your pain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time as being able to be with people who understand, you can get perspective, and so that you can make sound decisions for yourself on how to move forward. And BAN is open to both men and women because, of course, affairs are happening on both sides, and, you know, as long as you're the hurt spouse only. And right now we have just about 100 groups worldwide, and we're in 11 countries, and our goal is to make it as commonly known about and available as other major support groups like Al-Anon. So if anybody's out there and needing support, check and see on our website, which is www.beyondaffairs.com, and check out the list of cities. And if there's not a city near you, there's information about what to do in that situation. You might want to volunteer to be a coordinator. So that's about BAN.
Well, I just want to say, may I make a tag on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have used BAN through the Affair Recovery Center a great deal. I cannot recommend BAN strongly enough. I mean, what an amazing group of people. And like you, Ann, I know that the isolation is just horrible.
Yeah.
And so being able to find someone who can relate, or a group of people who can support, I think is just imperative, like the good friends you found.
Right.
It's awfully important to have wise heads around you, people who speak truth and speak in love, and who I call it are the carbon rods in the nuclear reactor that keep it from getting too hot at times.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So you can keep going. So certainly, beyondaffairs.com. I said affairs.com.
Affairs with an S, yeah.
Yes. And that is a tremendous resource for any of you guys listening tonight.
Right.
Okay, so, and you also wrote a phenomenal book.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, it's such a blessing to get the letters back from people pretty much daily on how it helps them. And basically, I wrote the book that I wish I could have found at the time. It's unique in the fact that, you know, it's written both by myself, most of it by myself, but also Brian's has written pieces of the book, so you get a real eye into what's going on for the person who's having the affair. And it tells it quite detailed, even from the point where Brian's still confused about what to do, the other woman's putting pressure on him to marry him, and, you know, all that chaos is going on in the family. And also, our oldest daughter, who was 16 at the time of the affair, and she just has a very strong personality, so she was right in there, and she writes portions of the book, so it really gives an insight into what's happening through the whole family dynamic. And even though it's not a how-to book, I believe that people, we leave it to the reader actually to make their own conclusions, and so to figure out the things we did that were wrong as well as the things that we did that were right, and the same for the support people in our lives. So, yeah, I think it, I mean, it always feels odd when you're talking about your own book, but I do feel it is a must-read for any couple going through it, and the comfort that you're going to get comfort, you're going to get hope, and you're going to get some solid steps of how do you move forward, and that's important.
And the name of her book is My Husband's Affair Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me, correct?
Or became. My Husband's Affair Became the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. And I always have a little bit of fun with media people because they say that, and then I say, it was the most devastating experience of my life. But where you go from here is a choice. You're either going to become bitter or you're going to become better. And I made a decision that I was going to survive this somehow and become better. And I always tell people that even if we hadn't reconciled our marriage, because Brian deserves the credit for that as much as I do, you know, that he made the decision to be the man and do the right things, otherwise we'd be divorced today. But if we were divorced, I still would have written the book and I still would have given it that title, because it has a lot to do with the personal growth that happened in me during that time.
Absolutely. So if you want to call in, since I've got those two points covered, I'll quit being selfish. You can call us at area code 512-637-9673. That's 512-637-9673. Or you can call toll free at 1-888-860-WORD. That's 9673. 1-888-860-9673. So the phones are open if you'd like to call in. Otherwise, don't worry, I'm going to keep asking them lots of questions. So,
great. And Rick, I just want to let everybody know, too, I know you guys are down in Texas. I'm not sure what state. But
Austin.
Austin.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We're in Austin. Brian and I are going to be in Dallas in August.
Oh, good.
And, we're doing one of our Healing from Affairs intensive weekends there. So that's an opportunity.
Absolutely. Correct. So if they want to get a hold of you, Anne, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
To either phone us at 604-859-9393, or just send us an email to info@beyondaffairs.com.
Okay. So info@beyondaffairs.com. So can they also contact you through the website, beyondaffairs.com?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I want everybody to write that down. That is a tremendous resource. Anne, if you had it to do all over again, would you change anything?
You mean, would I take the affair away?
You can't take the affair away. I mean, just in terms of your own recovery, if there's one thing you wish you could, if you could have done something different, maybe in the initial stages, is knowing what you know now, is there any way you would have done it a little different?
I think that I would have sought a little bit more support right in the beginning. I had been counseled, don't tell anyone, because if, you know, you decide to heal your marriage, it would be too difficult for Brian. So I was a bit too much in isolation in the beginning. And back in 2000, I didn't even think to do an internet search, so I didn't find that extra support. So that would probably be something that I would do differently.
So it would be just kind of what BAN offers in some ways, finding that extra support.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think if you don't have that, I think it's very, very difficult.
Yes, it is.
So, what did Brian do that you found to be the most helpful for your recovery?
He was willing to answer the questions, and he was willing to spend a lot of time talking with me. And sometimes we kid around and say we healed our marriage at Starbucks, but we would go out for coffee shops, and he would give me the time and talk to me, and that was very, very powerful. He also did other things that were important, because you walk around shaky, wondering if you can trust him, if you can ever love him again. And I remember, for example, one night he took me out for dinner at a beautiful seaside village, and this was just his way of trying to rekindle love and to show me by his actions that he was committed to me. And we went for a walk along the seaside where this restaurant was after, and I remember he said to me, "Ann, I'm going to take you out to dinner eventually to every one of these restaurants along this strip, just to I want to prove my love to you again." And it was those kind of things that I could see, okay, well, he's making an effort. What else can I ask of him? You know, sometimes you can't think of anything. So those were very helpful for me.
So, Brian, if your case was anything like my case, my affair partner wasn't through even when I was. Mm-hmm. And I kind of knew which way I wanted to go. So if your affair partner ever contacted you after you got going, how did you handle kind of what your affair partner was doing through that situation?
How did I handle when she... Oh, well, I'd had a few contacts after I told her we were done, right?
Right.
I was done, but she just, you know, she really wasn't done. I mean, she was a married woman, and so things were not well by the time it all unraveled on her end. So there was some things that were left not good for her, as I understand. And so she did make some contacts a few times with me to try to restart or whatever it was. But I really, just said, you know what, I'm sorry, but, I am done. You can't be, I really was just firm, gentle, but firm. And, there was a lot of tears and a lot of, sobbing on her end. And just, and there was some stuff that was, really quite, it was unpleasant to hear. I mean, there was all kinds of stuff that, there was police and things. Her husband wasn't really excited about all what was taking place, and so there were some bad things going on. But the reality is, I had to say, you're an adult, I'm an adult. You have to deal with it. I have to deal with this, and I'm not going to help you. And it seems cruel, but the reality is what was cruel was me having an affair. Not that was the cruel part. So I just said sorry. That's the way it is. And I had the this is not recommended, but I had the opportunity to go back to the place. I had to. It wasn't really an opportunity. I see it now as an opportunity. Back then I thought, it was a punishment. But I the vocation I was involved, I had to go back to the place where place of work where I'd met her and where everything started. And so after I ended the affair, I was separated myself from that place, but I had to go back. From my work, I was required to go back there, and I put this thing off for a month, and eventually brought a colleague along just to show up with me. And this person was wondering, why am I coming along with you to go look at this thing when I didn't tell him why he was there. But what I found out which is often the case, and is that when I went into the building, I knew the other woman would be there.
Right.
This intuition is like, oh man, or maybe the thing that you fear the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I show up at this place, and I don't think I was there more than 15 seconds, and around the corner comes the other woman.
Right.
And, but she comes around the corner with another man in her arms.
Ooh.
And so there was kind of one of those two things, that there was two reactions that I had, or almost simultaneously, and I'm not really sure which happened first, but one of the reactions was like this huge relief, like, whew, glad that's, you know. But the other reaction, because of the affair, was there was a little bit of jealousy there. It was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of those lingering emotion that was still, not completely dealt with, or not, you know, it hadn't completely went away. So, because, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, man, just a few months ago, I was like all that to you, and now you got some other guy. And what I've found working with couples, and I'm sure you know that as well, Rick, is that you find that when the affair ends, generally the third party moves on and finds somebody else.
Right.
And it helped me to understand that, it gave me a perspective as what she thought of me, and as often as she told me that I was, you know, that her prince, or that's how I perceived myself, that I was this prince to her, I was really no more than just this pawn piece in her chess game of life, right?
Right.
And so it helped me to realize that I wasn't that special. I just happened to be something that she was trying to get. I was just really more of a commodity to her, more so than a, you know, the soulmate, as which she used to use all the time. So,
yeah, that illusory life comes crashing down, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, the fantasy, you know, it's like even Cinderella heard mm-hmm. Fox Break 12, and that was just one of those other, it was, you know, it was just helpful. So, but I really had to be firm with her in the beginning, just like, you know, don't call me. You know, if you got a problem, go to family services or social services or phone the police, but don't call me. Or, you know, that's it. I'm sorry. It's, you know, we can't move on from there. So that was.
So what was one of the things you discovered about yourself through all of this, Brian?
Oh, man. We don't have a long enough program here. There was a lot of things. I mean, you know, I'm trying to think how to define what would be the simplest thing to say.
I'll tell you one thing, that because it deals with building trust, you know, and what I always tell couples, that one of the reasons why I have no fear, you know, at all, and feel totally secure in our relationship is because Brian's not the same man.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the skills that Brian learned through that whole process was not only self-awareness, but an ability to talk about his feelings, his hopes and fears and dreams. And that's something that's really changed in our relationship, and one of the reasons why we feel so close is because, and sometimes when we're working one-on-one with couples, they'll say, yes, Anne, but it's different in your situation because Brian can share his feelings with you. And I feel like jumping out of my chair and doing a giant timeout and saying, would you please meet post-affair Brian? These are skills he learned after.
Right.
And if Brian can learn those skills, then any one of those men out there that struggle to share their feelings can actually learn that without becoming feminine. So that's
thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So as y'all work
that
with,
in there, Brian.
Yeah. So as y'all work with couples, and by the way, for all you listening again tonight, Brian and Ann have a wonderful intensive weekend where they work with couples, just like we do at the Affair Recovery Center, and it is amazing. When y'all work with couples, what do you feel like is the most significant issue that couples tend to face?
There's a number of them that are equally significant. Finding out the root causes of why, instead of letting it settle with surface issues, we usually find that if we ask couples in the beginning, why did this happen, the reasons why they come up with are not the real reasons. But there's also the rebuilding of trust, and then the issue of forgiveness is huge. And then there's, for the betrayed person, they have to, you know, overcome. They have to process the anger, and they have to be able to release the sadness. They have to overcome those obsessive thoughts. And for the one who had the affair, they have to overcome the guilt. They have to learn how to forgive themselves as well as being forgiven. And sometimes we find that for them to forgive themselves is actually harder than...
And I think one of the other things that we, you know, we... we found to be one of the significant things is just learning, getting couples on learning how to communicate properly.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, they all come in and, well, we didn't communicate well enough. And so you give them tools to be able to learn how to communicate and speak effectively to one another in a, so that nobody gets hurt, nobody's angry.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of is the foundation to be able to deal with all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're not learning how to be able to talk to one another in a way that your spouse understands you, you're not really. Then you're just talking and you're not communicating. And so, we start off foundationally, just trying to give them that tool and teaching them how to do that, so it's safe for each person. Because there's a lot of volatile emotion there that needs to be tempered so that it can be palatable for each individual. And so, with all those things, we've
that's true. The communication is a foundation.
Yeah, and I think every couple, you probably experience that, Rick, is that every couple, there's certain things that they're more stuck on than others. And,
right.
And so you try to be a little sensitive to each individual's situation and address them individually. So, which we found to be, the couple's kind of the one-on-one we spend with people tends to be very effective in easing the anxiety that they have.
You know, and something I meant to mention, and I'd love for you to talk about it. Would you talk about your newsletter?
Sure. Yeah, I do try to put out a newsletter that goes out at least once a month, and I work on twice a month. But I write articles as often as I can, and a lot of them are just the answers to questions that people are asking throughout the website. And at the same time, wanting to let people know about resources that are available. When I hear about a new book that's particularly good, or, when we're going to be, there's some way that people can access us. Brian and I also try to offer some free telephone seminars so that people can call in and that way we can be sensitive to those who maybe can't afford the intensive weekends and still give them some help and some guidance.
Yeah, and I mean, again, that is such an incredible service the two of you give, and so... again, I just really want people listening in. It's really surprising, guys. I think I waited so long to open up the phones. Typically, I open up the phones in the beginning. And again, I was very selfish because I wanted a chance to talk with y'all. Because once the phones get going, it's hard to get the questions in. But I really wanted people to hear these things that y'all are doing because I just think it's so important. And, this is an amazing resource, both for the hurt spouse and also for the unfaithful spouse. So, guys, you really need to get to their website, Beyond Affairs, get on the newsletter. Actually, I think your book is one of the best ones out on the market.
Thank you, Rick.
And simply because I think it provides balance and it provides a lot of hope. And I think a lot of times someone who is hurt really needs to be able to hear that hope, that message you began with tonight. I just think that is an incredible message.
Mm. That's great.
So I'm just going to pray that God just continue to bless you and your efforts. We're drawing close to the end of the hour, and I've got to close things out with our schedule for the next couple of weeks. But thank you so much for joining us this evening. Any last words you want to say to everybody out there?
I would say that, don't give up, put the effort in, and to the people that have been unfaithful, it doesn't have to, as dark as it might seem, the sun will rise tomorrow if you just keep putting the time and effort in and you don't quit and you don't minimize things, you don't shirk your responsibility, step up to the plate, and man up, as I like to say.
Absolutely.
And I would just add that I want people to know that today, although I remember Brian's affair and because of the need, we've got this passion to help others through it, but the affair is no longer a part of our lives. When I finish this phone interview, when I'm done work for the day, Brian and I have a life and it doesn't involve affairs. And when I do remember Brian's affair, in my work and so on, there's absolutely no pain attached to that memory anymore. And that's complete healing, and that's out there for everyone. So I just say, keep pressing in. And it's going to take you, you know, many resources. I know that, Rick, you also offer great services, which I'm excited about for people. And sometimes people say, Anne, what was the key to your healing? What was the one thing? And I say, no, it wasn't one
right.
thing. It was all of the things together. Each one provided a piece. And from pressing in, we didn't quit, like Brian says, till we were all the way there.
Absolutely. Well, good night, guys. And I just pray the next wedding goes very well.
Thank All right. you, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
God bless.
Good
night.
Good night.
Good night. And this has been Affair Recovery Radio tonight. Thank you for joining us. And we do have an online group starting. So if you go to affairrecovery.com, you can jump in the next group. It's going to be closed probably this next week. So we'd love to have you. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. May God bless.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS.